was Chris Marshall.
To be speaking to you now through the BBC has a very special meaning for me.
We present the Reith Lectures.
It means that once again, I'm officially a free person.
On BBC Radio 4, the economic historian Neil Ferguson explores the role of man-made institutions in driving global change.
Why did the West get so much richer and more powerful than the rest of the world?
The Reith Lectures 2012.
And why is that slipping away?
On Tuesday morning at 9.
What's gone wrong with Western institutions? They used to be so good.
Over on BBC Radio 4.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news from Ian Skelly.
A general election with implications for the whole of Europe is being held in Greece. European leaders fear that a victory for the Syriza party, which strongly opposes the terms of Greece's international loan agreements, could result in the country leaving the eurozone. Polling stations close in 4 hours. Details have emerged of a plan circulated by the President Hollande of France to resolve the eurozone crisis. It calls for growth measures this year worth 120 billion euros, the pooling of debt, and a new framework for regulating the financial system. The Defence Secretary, Philip Hammond, has announced that there's to be a major refurbishment of the Rolls-Royce plant in Derby to allow for the building of reactors for nuclear-armed submarines. He said the details will be announced in Parliament tomorrow. Activists in Syria say thousands of government forces have intensified their bombardment of the country's third biggest city, Homs. Syrian troops have also been attacking rebel forces in suburbs in and around the capital, Damascus. A second and final day of voting is taking place in the presidential election in Egypt. So far, turnout has been low as voters choose between two candidates, one a former associate of the ousted president, Hosni Mubarak, the other from the Muslim Brotherhood. People who are off work on strike will no longer be able to claim working tax credit under new rules to be introduced next year. Ministers say benefit claimants should pay the price for choosing to strike. The Olympic flame has passed through Durham on the 30th day of its tour through Britain and Ireland. One torchbearer, the England cricketer Paul Collingwood, turned the flame upside down and mimed a batting stroke to the cheers of crowds outside Durham Cathedral. The weather for this afternoon, most areas will see sunny spells and a scattering of showers. The wind will be lighter than of late, though. Maximum temperatures will range from 12 to 18 degrees Celsius, and rain will push into south and east England overnight. Well, that's the BBC News and the weather. It's now 3 minutes past one.
And time for the Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
The overture to Monteverdi's opera Orfeo, first given more than 400 years ago in Mantua as a private palace entertainment, and one of the earliest music dramas that's still regularly performed. Stroll around any art gallery or museum and you'll soon come across a painting or artifact that depicts one of the ancient Greek legends. Some are still familiar, like Orpheus, the musician, poet and prophet who descended into Hades to try and rescue his dead bride Eurydice. But other stories can be harder to identify these days, which is a shame because they do seem to pervade almost every area of Western culture, painting and sculpture, poetry, and of course, they're often the inspiration for Baroque music. Well, we have an unashamedly mixed musical menu on the show today. Some excellent ensembles playing a variety of different pieces, all of them connected to some of the great myths of ancient Greece. We're going to hear about Jason and Hercules in a moment. But first, another piece on the Orpheus story, this time reflecting on our hero's famous musical skills. Come, woeful Orpheus, with thy charming lyre, and tune my soul into thy skilful wire. Some strange chromatic notes do you devise that best with mournful accents sympathise. A five-part song by the Elizabethan composer William Byrd. The Hilliard Ensemble with Come Woeful Orpheus by William Byrd, published in 1611. Of course, stories from the ancient world were being harvested for works of art and music long before the 1600s. Medieval and Renaissance poets such as Dante, Boccaccio and Petrarch in Italy found inspiration through the medium of Latin and the works of Ovid. And in France, the 14th century poet and composer Guillaume de Machaut left us with the rather romantic song we're going to hear in a moment, which compares the brave exploits of three classical heroes with the simple charms of love. Machaut was a musician who made it his business to break new ground, particularly when it came to the still fledgling idea of harmony. In fact, his music can sound quite weird to us today because sometimes not only would there be two different tunes sung together, but they had different words too. And within the texture, there's a sense of gradual shifting of harmony, moving almost subconsciously, step by step. When Theseus, Hercules and Jason roamed over lands and deep sea to see the wonders of the world, they proved worthy of our respect. But my pleasure is a simple one. The sight of my lady is all I desire.
Oh.
Theseus, Hercules and Jason roamed the lands. Thomas Binkley directed the voices and instruments of the Studio des Frouen Musiques in Cologne in that chanson from the 14th century by Guillaume de Machaut. And talking of Jason, the dramatic story of the leader of the Argonauts and his search for the Golden Fleece was the inspiration for what was probably the single most popular opera of the 17th century, Cavalli's Giasone, or Jason. Francesco Cavalli's main job, if you like, was principal organist at St Mark's in Venice. In 1688, at the grand age of 66, he was promoted to musical director. But this hard-working musician still had time to compose some 41 operas. And unlike Monteverdi before him, they weren't simply aimed at the privileged few, but given in Venice's public opera houses, so even the hoi polloi could enjoy them. Giasone was produced in 1649 during Carnival time, when Venice's lively inhabitants were in even more of a party mood than usual. And hard at it they certainly were, getting in as much action as possible before the austerity of the period of Lent, when of course the opera houses would be closed by law. Giasone may have been loosely based on the story of Jason, but there was comedy too, and lots of opportunities to wow the audience with special effects like Medea's magic, Pluto descending from the heavens, and any number of fights and dances. Indeed, without all that, the audience probably would have demanded their money back. We're going to hear part of the final act, where Jason reflects on the horrors of recent events. Wherever I turn my footsteps, an abyss yawns. Wherever I fix my gaze, I see the terrible apparition of two horrible spectres, an outraged Medea and the shade of a murdered woman.
Yeah.
Michael Chance as Jason in that lament from Cavalli's opera Giassone, premiered in 1637 at Venice's first public opera house, the Teatro di San Cassiano, not far from the Rialto Bridge. René Jacobs directed Concerto Vocale. Through many centuries, the story of Jason and his marriage to the sorceress Medea proved one of the most intoxicating of the Greek myths for both librettists and composers. Charpentier did a version, as did Caldara and Cherubini, all getting rave reviews from the paying public. And surely Handel is up there with the best of them when it comes to tales of antiquity, with so many of his best-known music dramas based on them. We're going to hear an excerpt from his Semele, whose own history echoes, if not the tragedy of a Greek legend, then at least something of the confusion. In London, where Handel was now a naturalised British citizen, by the 1740s, the whole public appetite for full-on Italian opera had waned. Like today, it was incredibly expensive to produce, and with opera companies going bankrupt, it had all got rather nasty. So Handel now began composing oratorios, which, because they were officially concert works, unlike opera, were allowed to be performed during the Lenten season. Usually their subjects were drawn from the Old Testament, but Semele was a notable exception, and unfortunately its sexy soap opera-style plot offended everyone. Pious oratorio enthusiasts who expected a high-minded religious work were affronted by its raciness, and opera aficionados were put off because it was in English rather than the proper language of opera, that is, Italian. "This is no oratorio but a bawdy opera," wrote the rich patron of music Charles Jennings. The plot is certainly complex, but briefly, the king of the god Zeus falls in love with Semele, who's mortal. They have a secret affair, and Semele gets pregnant with Zeus's child, a son, Dionysus. Mind you, these works were often quite loose in terms of sticking strictly to the original Greek myth, and here most of the names have been changed from Greek to Roman. So Zeus becomes Jupiter, his wife Hera becomes Juno, and so on. The aria we're going to hear is probably the most famous in the opera, the love song from Act Two, sung by Zeus, or rather Jupiter, to Semele. "Where'er you walk, cool gales shall fan the glade."
Thank you.
The tenor Richard Croft with the early opera company conducted by Christian Kernin with the aria Where'er You Walk from Handel's opera Semele. You're listening to the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're looking at music that was inspired by stories from Greek mythology. One composer you might not immediately associate with a good Greek yarn is the rather serious-minded cantor of Leipzig, namely Johann Sebastian Bach. I guess we naturally assume his cantatas were all written to be performed as part of the Lutheran liturgy, but actually not all of them were based on biblical themes. Cantata number 201, for instance, Swift You Swirling Winds, has the subtitle The Dispute Between Phoebus and Pan. Bach wrote it for the opening of a Leipzig concert series he'd been asked to direct, and it has an interesting subtext. The libretto uses the ancient myth of a musical contest between Phoebus and Pan to comment on an argument that was raging amongst Bach's contemporaries about popular and learned music, and which was better, or at any rate, more worthy. The learned was represented by Pan, and the popular by Phoebus. And in the end, well, of course, Pan is defeated.
Zum Tanzen, zum Sprunge, so wackelt das Herz. Zu tanzen, zu sprunge, zu tanzen, zu sprunge, zu sprunge, zu tanzen, so wacker, kackel das Herz. Zu tanzen, zu sprunge, zu tanzen, zu sprunge, so wacker das Herz. Zu tanzen, zu sprunge, zu tanzen, zu sprunge, zu sprunge, zu
Donald Bentvorson with the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra with that aria from Bach's Cantata No. 201, The Dispute Between Phoebus and Pan. And we're staying with the Bach dynasty for our next piece, which is by Johann Christian, otherwise known as the London Bach, because he arrived in the capital for a year at the age of 27 and stayed and stayed and stayed, which was good because he'd come direct from Italy, where he'd begun to make quite a name for himself as a composer of operas. The London audiences were evidently also impressed. After hearing J.C. Bach's very first London opera, Orione, Charles Burney dubbed him a genius. And soon everyone wanted a piece of the action, even George III's consort, Queen Charlotte, who employed the young German as her music master and presumably was delighted to be able to communicate with him in their common native language. Orione was given at the King's Theatre in 1756. It was based on the Greek legend of the mythological giant huntsman, whom Zeus placed in the stars as the constellation Orion. The show ran for 3 months, which was quite something in those days, and was amongst the earliest works to use the newfangled instrument known as the clarinet. Here's a little taster in the form of the overture played by the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogwood.
Thank you.
Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogg, with the overture to Johann Christian Bach's first London opera, Orione, based on the Greek legend of Orion the Hunter. Some composers used the ancient myths in a more abstract way, but still to great effect. Around the same time that J.C. Bach was making his name in London, over in France, the great Jean-Philippe Rameau was turning out reams of music for the keyboard. And as was the fashion of the time, many of the pieces had descriptive, picturesque titles. The Call of the Birds, or The Timid, or The Pantomime, for example. And one which neatly fits into our programme today, The Cyclops. These were the giant one-eyed monsters, of course, who, in one telling of the story at any rate, provided the god Zeus with a thunderbolt, a trident, and a magic helmet to make him invisible. In other words, everything he needed to defeat the Titans, which he did. Here's Rameau's rather explosive take on the Cyclops, as played by Trevor Pinnock. Trevor Pinnock with that wonderfully busy depiction by Rameau of the one-eyed craftsman of Greek mythology, the Cyclops. And we're sticking with non-human creatures for our next music as well. It's by the composer Johann Schmelzer, who is employed at Kroměříž Castle in Bohemia, the residence of the Prince Bishop of Olomouc. Here in the summer season, the prince would lay on a lavish schedule of entertainments for his guests, which included a variety of ballets for which Schmelzer provided the music. More than 150 ballet suites of his survived, and although we no longer know when or for which entertainment they were all written, they do give us a glimpse into the privileged, colourful goings-on at the castle in the mid-17th century. This ballet is for nymphs and centaurs, and it would be interesting, wouldn't it, to know just how the castle's wardrobe department managed to dress the dancers up to give them a convincing half-human, half-horse form, but still to let them manage a graceful dégagé across the floor. Musica Fiata, performing that ballet music by Schmelzer, a dance of nymphs and centaurs from ancient Greek mythology. Well, it's no myth that we've almost run out of time. And for our final piece in what must surely today be called the legendary early music show, we've got a recording of a little-known opera by Johann Conradi, the very production, in fact, that I was lucky enough to attend a few years ago at the Boston Early Music Festival. It was a really memorable evening. A tiny stage, just like one of those early private court theatres, excellent singing, divine costumes, and some fabulous on-stage fireworks at the climax to give it that authentic Baroque touch. The opera is called Ariadne, and it tells the story of the daughter of Minos, the king of Crete, who helps Theseus to overcome the Minotaur of the labyrinth and saves the would-be sacrificial victims held prisoner there. This is the aria Ariadne sings just before Theseus enters the labyrinth. O sunshine of the most beautiful eyes, please appear. Even if you want to forbid light from gracing my day of joys, just shine a torch to lead me to my grave. Karina Gauvin is Ariadne with the orchestra of the Boston Early Music Festival, directed by Paul Odette and Stephen Stubbs.
Leuchtest Licht in mein Freude zu ziehen. So sei es dann, und soll ich gleich erblassen, soll meine Gunst doch Theseus nie verlassen.
Carina Govan sang the title role in that aria from Johann Conradi's opera Ariadne. The Boston Early Music Festival Orchestra was conducted by Paul Odette and Stephen Stubbs. Well, today's Early Music Show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Les Pratt. And on next Saturday's programme, Lucy will be presenting a focus on the Philadelphia-based baroque orchestra La Tempesta di Mare, with music by Vivaldi, Telemann and Pisendel. That's at the usual time, just after the 1 o'clock news. Well, our Sunday feature this weekend takes Radio 3 to Mexico.
Entering the garden, you look up. A twisted column reaches up 20 metres. You feel very small.
The bridge that if you could walk across, you were a pure person.
You approach a doorway and find yourself turning sideways just to get through.
The elevator was like a cage, you know, so the humans became the caged animals and the lions would be running around.
This is no Alice in Wonderland. Radio 3 tells the story of a wonky garden labyrinth of hillside pathways and hidden ruins, and the bizarre sequence of events that led to its creation.
In the presidential suite at the Imperial Hotel.
The only hotel that would take cobras.
A garden that has captured the imagination of a new generation of artists.
Immediately, that side in all of us that comes out, you know, the child.
This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature, starting at 7:45.
Well, now it's time for the Sunday concert, which was recorded last month, and it's introduced by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Farnham Castle, home of successive bishops of Winchester for 800 years and a sumptuous B&B for English monarchs from King John to Queen Victoria. We've a concert with more than a hint of celebration about it. The London Handel Players are marking the Diamond Jubilee of the Tilford Bach Festival with a dense, satisfying listen in the form of Bach's musical offering, written to please a German king who was a rare, musicianly royal. Frederick the Great, born 300 years ago this year. And first, in contrast to the Bach, we'll be hearing some music in the Galant style that King Frederick liked so much by composers Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, Quantz, Bender, and Frederick himself. The London Handel Players are violinist Adrian Butterfield, flautist Rachel Brown, cellist Catherine Sharman, and harpsichordist Alastair Ross. And they begin their programme with two movements from a trio sonata by Johann Sebastian Bach's second son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, known in his lifetime as the original genius, but only to a comparatively small public. One former pupil of his father commented that Sebastian and Emanuel would have grown to join the great and successful composers if only they'd settled in a metropolis like Naples, Paris, or London, instead of staying in Germany. This is the Adagio and Allegro from the Trio Sonata in C major, number 147.